Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where we have absolutely no geese to chase whatsoever. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 64 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 4, Episode 6 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., entitled The Good Samaritan, which aired November 1st, 2016.
And this episode was written by Jeffrey Bell and directed by Billy Gearhart. That's the eighth for each of them, those two, and Billy Gearhart, of course, did the premiere. So it's a great team to bring to this episode that almost felt like a mid-season finale, and I don't know if that was planned or just happened to be that way, but kind of cool considering we have to wait a long time now.
Yeah, you wonder what their plan is in terms of how they're going to break up season four. As you said, I think these six episodes, not necessarily as a standalone, but certainly as part one.
Yeah.
Really strong.
Chapter one, if you will, or yeah. Act one. But I think it's interesting, too, that you mentioned that, because the hiatus, of course, is going to be painful. But we have to remember also that we won't have to wait until March for the various gaps that might occur. And, of course, this has become quite a controversy online, especially in the official Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Facebook group, where people are just going crazy thinking that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is being shirked and denigrated by this move to have all these other shows going on during November sweeps. And I think there's probably not as much to it as some people might think.
Did you think I was going to stay out of the fray?
Yeah, I did, actually. And then I saw you poke up with your comment there in the main group.
I can't help myself sometimes, but I don't think I said anything that was too out of line, because as I mentioned in mine, and again, I think you posted somebody else's comment to basically the same thing, that look, there's between 34 and 36 weeks of time that they have to fill, and they're only producing 22 episodes, and we don't have Agent Carter.
Exactly. So it becomes a case of what did you expect? But yeah, that was Samantha Rusk who posted that on Facebook, a great little graphic that outlined the 34-week-long season, television season, where 22 episodes are obviously going to have some gaps. I think the main objection that people had was that it was during November sweeps, which kind of implies that in order for the networks to set their advertising rates, which is what November sweeps is all about, and May as well, they are putting shows in that will get better ratings so that they can charge higher rates for their advertising. And the things that are replacing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., besides Election Day and Thanksgiving, which automatically put S.H.I.E.L.D. at a disadvantage in November, they're putting David Blaine special and Dancing with the Stars special, which kind of feels like an insult, even though it's actually just a marketing strategy.
Well, right. And look, there's no bigger conspiracy theorist than me.
Yeah.
But that said, I'm convinced that the reason they're doing this is that they don't care about S.H.I.E.L.D. And by that, I mean, they don't care about the numbers. They're fine with the numbers. Let's make some more money with Dancing with the Stars, and S.H.I.E.L.D.'s good. S.H.I.E.L.D., you don't have to worry. You're coming back.
And I think what we can take from this is that if they used up these gaps already, then there's going to be fewer gaps later on in the season, because they've already used up, what, 3 weeks here and 1 week earlier on where we had a week off?
Right.
So there's going to be fewer gaps in the future. So I think having S.H.I.E.L.D. in February, for example, is going to be a fun treat. So there's a lot of things surrounding it. We're going to take a little breather and come back to you guys at the end of November. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think people should probably just calm down. But
yeah, because the Live Plus 7 numbers are strong.
And in the meantime, there's something else on the horizon that they can enjoy. And that's the Doctor Strange premiere this Friday, tomorrow for us, but by the time these guys get the podcast, Doctor Strange will be out in theaters already. And there was already a tie-in with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with the Darkhold, which is a comics tie-in of course, it hasn't actually been tied in with the show. In fact, what's strange about Doctor Strange, even though we did have that nice little sneak peek instead of an epilogue this week, Doctor Strange is the first Marvel movie that I know of in a while that Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't specifically mentioned in some sort of reference during the episode. In that sense, it was missing from today's episode other than the epilogue.
Right. And, you know, I was both disappointed and kind of thrilled at what they did here. Disappointed that there was no traditional epilogue. But on the other hand, that was a pretty good sneak peek at Doctor Strange. It's not going to get me to leave my house and go to the theater, but I am excited to see it eventually.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely adding that to my list. No question about it. I'm more excited about it than some of the other MCU stuff. I'm a big Captain America fan, but I don't jump into all the other ones sometimes. So yeah, nice, something to look forward to. But we've got an episode to discuss here, so let's go right into our episode discussion.
All right, well, Mike, some initial thoughts. And look, I'm not a fan of the editing style in this episode. You know, the opening scene I thought was well done. They really gave it some time to develop. It was, I think, about 5 minutes long, but there were just too many segments that it was 10 seconds here, 20 seconds there, and then we're jumping back and forth. I know you don't want to do that every week, but I don't know. There was just something about this episode that really bothered me.
Well, especially since we were giving S.H.I.E.L.D. compliments for their editing style, where they were segueing from one scene into the next by introducing the audio before the video showed up.
Yeah.
That was kind of a fun thing that they've done this season, and they've done it in the past as well. Now, this one, it did have very quick pacing, but I did notice that the camera transitions, a lot of times it would go across something black, and then it would transition to coming above Fritz's monitor or something like that. So there were some pretty cool visual transitions, but they came very quickly.
Well, and the other thing is that because of the fact that they were using flashbacks throughout the episode, that made it, you know, somewhat confusing as well. Okay, flashback, let's stay on that scene for a while. Come back to the present, let's stay there for a little bit instead of back and forth. However, I still thought it was an excellent episode.
Yeah, in fact, it was strange that that was contrasted by the flashback to the origin of Robbie Reyes's stint as Ghost Rider, which was a very slow and dramatic scene stuck in the middle of all the frenzy.
Right. Now, the other thing that I really loved about this episode is this whole recurring theme of trust. And it knew no bounds. Joe and Lucy want the rest of their team to trust them. Coulson can't bring himself to trust Mace. There's, of course, that undercurrent of distrust now between Fitz and Simmons. And that's just for starters. So I really loved the way they handled that, especially in light of Director Mace's little tag phrase, you know, the team that trusts is a team that triumphs.
Right. And there was mention of the word trust several times, like pointed references, especially from Eli when he was being told by Lucy to trust her and Joe that they knew what they were doing with the Darkhold. And he was laughing at that. So, yeah, they specifically talked about trust. And we've mentioned that trust is a theme in S.H.I.E.L.D., but no more so than in this episode, definitely.
Yeah. And I also really like the way they, for somebody like me that's not at all conversant with the comic universe, so therefore I didn't know what to expect out of the different characters, it really threw me for a loop the way, you know, Eli, for instance, turned out to be the bad guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's good that you mentioned the comic tie-in because obviously, yeah, you know that I was waiting for Eli to be a bad guy because he was a serial killer in the comics. So it was interesting to see them bring a dark turn to that character here.
Right. Now, the other question I have, and maybe you know the answer, maybe this is just something we're supposed to think about, but is there a connection between Darkhold and the Good Samaritan?
That's an excellent question, because I've always held that the two storylines are going to end up being related, especially since Eli being part of the Momentum Group and Robbie just happening to encounter someone who is associated with dark forces, just like the book, seems awfully coincidental. But as of now, we have no specific tie-in.
Right. It's just logically, they almost have to come together at some point.
Right. But it's not immediately clear how that connection is going to be made. So that'll be fun to watch unfold. Or maybe we'll be surprised and it won't be related at all.
Yeah. Now, I'm a big fan of flashbacks. So right away, we flashback to Momentum Energy Labs, and we see Eli driving up in the Charger, which is pre-Hood Scoop. And what other modifications have been made by Robbie in the interim?
Yes, exactly.
But, you know, what we see is that Joe had a breakthrough, and I'm making air quotes, because right away, Eli's distrustful of whatever these breakthroughs really are, because the team now has unexpectedly moved up the timetable for this experiment they've been working on, and I'm still a little fuzzy what the deal is with the cubes.
Yeah, oh no, you should be. It's definitely unusual, and I think we're supposed to be placed in the shoes of the other team members. I mean, the one guy even says, oh, I'm so glad my eyeballs are protected from whatever explosion is about to occur, because he shouldn't have been able to leap to whatever this cube does so quickly. So I think we're purposely not supposed to know how these cubes work. The only thing we know is that whatever energy is in there, and however the energy is getting into the cube, it's passing through and being converted into matter in the chamber on the other side.
Okay. And so what we see is that he's able to create a piece of carbon, i.e. matter from nothing.
Right.
Okay. Now, Joe, and this was interesting coming on the heels of a discussion that Wayne and I had, he's excited about the altruistic possibilities. You know, he can cure world hunger, but as Wayne brings up, is there ever really true altruism?
When were you talking about that?
Believe it or not, on the Librarians podcast.
But it could come up in any TV show. But yeah, that's true. Is there such thing as true altruism with any character save the most heroic protagonist?
Right. And you want to believe Joe. He seems sincere.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Okay, maybe I'm a dope here. But clearly we see Eli concerned, and we think at this point, okay, he's concerned because he doesn't believe Joe's altruistic tendencies.
Right. It's not all about creating grain and food for the hungry. It's also about creating in general. I don't think he realizes it quite at this early stage, but I think it does concern him that there seems to be more energy that's going into the experiment does not equal the energy that's coming out of it, or right, the other way around, which violates the first law of thermodynamics. So obviously he thinks that it's either dangerous or that he's not being told the whole truth about the source of Joe's knowledge.
Right. So I guess at the end of the day, what we've got is the classic one scientist stealing another scientist's work.
Right. And I think they also probably felt a little out of the loop. He had some kind of intuitive leap that he can't explain, and they're kind of feeling left in the dust.
Right. Because at this point, Eli's just simply skeptical about how he made this leap. And then, of course, Lucy can't keep her mouth shut, mentions the book, and Joe tries to stop her. And I love that line. It's mine, my precious.
Oh, yes. That's definitely true. It's got that same corrupting power as the One Ring.
Right. And then, look, it never ends well when one person says to another, do what I tell you to do. Everything's going to work out fine.
Right, especially since if Joe had the cooperation of his whole team, what would really be the end result? Would he really end up sharing the Nobel Prize or whatever accolades came their way or whatever power came his way, or would he just discard them? Because I think he probably would.
Well, right, because we don't really have a good sense of the power of the book. We understand that the book gives knowledge, but does the book also work with the emotional, the intellectual?
It seduces.
Yes. And we don't really know to what effect it does that.
Exactly.
I mean, do you have to have those inherent traits already and the book just exacerbates them? We don't know. And maybe we'll find out. Yeah, which will be interesting now that S.H.I.E.L.D.'s in possession of the book.
Right. I mean, that's the first thing I thought of when Coulson picked it up. Oh, don't touch it. You know, that kind of thing where they might get corrupted just by being near it.
All right. Well, let's take a look at Robbie Reyes' origin story, which, I just thought was wonderfully done. You know, I know I criticized the pace and the editing, everything else, though. I don't know what else you would want in an episode that ends the first segment of a show's season. So we see the fact that Robbie's gone AWOL, and Gabe is, I don't want to use the word desperate, but he does seem a bit concerned. He's calling the auto shop, and then all of a sudden Daisy shows up, and the first of many really cool scenes.
Where he expects to be taken away in a car, and she's like, nah, we got a different idea in mind.
Yeah, and then you hear the Quinjet.
Yeah, a nice use of audio engineering there, but also reinforces the character, because Gabe, of course, feels protective of Robbie, even though Robbie's the older brother that's protecting his supposedly helpless little brother.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful motif that's been working throughout this whole season.
Yes.
And it's just underscored by the fact that he's in a wheelchair.
Right. And I love the fact that that character thinks it sucks, but is okay with it. You know, he's already accepted it. And Robbie's guilt is entirely his own.
Yeah. And I love it when Gabe tells him later on, don't dump that on me.
Exactly.
Right. That's your trip.
That's right.
Now, we talked about trust at the top of the podcast, and the transparency is disappearing as Gabe and Daisy meet and talk with Robbie on the plane. And, you know, before Robbie can say anything, Gabe tells him he's putting the pieces together. And you see how worried Robbie looks when he mentions the blood on the clothes, late nights. You're a secret agent.
Yeah. And you say the transparency is disappearing because of the fact that they immediately go into a lie with him. Is that it?
Well, the lie that leads to the truth.
Yes. Well, thankfully, it does not last long. And we understand Daisy's instinct, where she takes advantage of the moment and runs with the story that he's a secret agent to try and protect Robbie's secret. Because, of course, Robbie doesn't want to let Gabe in on the fact that he made a deal with the devil. So this was a small attempt at obfuscating the issue and maybe creating a trust issue. But thankfully, it doesn't end up staying that way with these two.
Right, because at this point, this is not a team that trusts.
Right.
And of course, it's understandable because Gabe fears the worst, that, you know, his brother got involved with a gang, with not necessarily using drugs, but perhaps selling them or moving, you know, just something that he feared. And we also get a good look and sense of what Gabe's life was like before the accident, and I suppose even now. And then we find out right away that it's clear that the secret agent story isn't going to stand for much longer.
Well, as soon as they're in that containment chamber, when Mace comes on board, Gabe's like, okay, wait a minute. And Daisy does make a good attempt where she says, well, you know, it's my past because I'm Quake and everything like that. But they're in there with her too. And Gabe immediately calls her on it. Why are we hiding?
Well, right. And you really feel the anguish that Robbie's been feeling, because he doesn't want to lie to his brother.
Right.
And, you know, it's almost a relief to be able to get it out. And, you know, that line, you deserve the truth, all of it. And, of course, we're wondering, well, okay, is he really going to give him all of it? And I guess truth be told, he doesn't really give him all of it.
Well, he wants to hear the way Gabe sees it first. So that's why it's interesting we see the flashback from both of their eyes. I do like the fact that this is being brought up, that you deserve the truth, when other people in the episode are also deserving of the truth and not getting it. So I think we could all learn a little lesson from Robbie.
Right. Now, what'd you think about the back in the day?
I didn't love it. I thought they should be more specific, because especially since they've made it seem like the ghost crew were in those chambers for years. I think Lucy even used the plural, years, when she was telling her colleagues how long they've been in there. But it doesn't seem like that long since Robbie became the ghostwriter, and yet it seems longer, perhaps, that Gabe's been in the wheelchair. So it seems like the timeline is a little off, and back in the day doesn't help.
No, it doesn't. And I went back and tried to look in our notes, because for some reason, 11 years in those chambers stuck in my head.
Oh, really?
But I couldn't find it, and then just ran out of time, as we usually do on recording nights. But as you said, back in the day, doesn't quite cut it, but it is what it is. So we see Robbie sneaking out Eli's charger in the night to go racing. And, you know, we hear the fact that it's a rematch with one of the Fifth Street Locos, who, of course, we already are introduced to. But what we really learn, I think, in that scene is Gabe's background, that this is a kid that's applying to Stanford and Berkeley.
Yeah. And if you think about it, it makes sense for a family that has a scientist like Eli in it to have other very intelligent members of the family as well, from the hereditary standpoint.
Yeah. And I've certainly always contended that the best mechanics are the ones that are smart.
Yeah.
And as he says, you know, I don't want to be an engineer. I don't want to stay at a desk. And truth be told, he is an engineer working with cars at the level he works with them.
Well, that's what's so interesting. And of course, Gabe does try to mention that he's got homework and that's why he's up late and all that. But Robbie wants to get Gabe to come with him for this race and spectate. And Robbie starts talking about torque. It's not about the speed. It's about the acceleration. And Gabe is starting to think, you know, brother, you could get on this Berkeley and Stanford action as well if you'd apply yourself. And it implies that there's some kind of past that includes maybe some parents disappearing from the picture and Robbie had to take a back seat to help his brother out.
Right, and take care of him. And as Gabe mentions, that time has passed. You could go back to school. But at this point for Robbie, he certainly sees it as being too late. But I did find it interesting. I wonder what you thought of Robbie kind of pushing his brother to come with him, you know, forget your homework, given what he knows about his brother's aspirations.
That is an interesting thing. And of course, he does end up having a lot of guilt from bringing his brother along. But I think he's just jazzed at the fact that he made a grand off the guy last week and now he might be able to pull in some more money. Yeah, it's tough to get a handle on Robbie's personality pre-Ghost Rider because now he's kind of like the brooding fellow that we know from the beginning of the season.
Right, and I think Gabe's attitude really tells us all we need to know about that question in that he understands his brother just wanted his younger brother to get out, experience life outside of the classroom, outside of academia, and that their relationship was close then, it's close now, that it just was an accident and nothing more. And, you know, his brother mentions about bad luck, and then Robbie says there's no such thing as luck, only decisions and consequences, which obviously we know harkens back to his deal with the devil, which at this point we still are somewhat dubious whether it's actually with El Diablo himself.
Right. There's still a lot of mystery surrounding this. I think it's interesting that Gabe saw it as a good Samaritan pulling up on a motorcycle. And we immediately made the association with the Johnny Blaze version of Ghost Rider, who was on a motorcycle, and almost implies that he passed on the curse, the gift, the power, whatever it was, to the deceased Robbie. And so was there a motivation behind that? Is it something that was fated to occur, or was it something that Robbie asked for and received because of his quote-unquote deal with the devil? I think there's still a lot of mystery surrounding that, and it's not as cut and dry as Robbie thinks it is.
Okay, and I'm also going to go out on a limb here that at some point in the coming weeks, Coulson is going to mention getting T-shirts made since he died, May died, Robbie died.
Let's start a club, as he
exactly, said. Exactly. But then when he explains to Gabe that being thrown from the car, he begged God, the universe, whoever's out there, he doesn't say the word, the devil. I mean, who's going to think about that? I think most people, regardless of their religious leanings, is going to probably acknowledge God at a time like this.
Right. And that's why I think it's a little bit dubious that Robbie thinks this is how it happened. Just the fact that he was feeling that way didn't make it happen. I think there's definitely more to it than just him asking to do anything to spare his brother. And the fact that there was vengeance to be had may be called to the vengeance demon, Ghost Rider.
Right, because then it gets into the whole idea of swearing to go after those who spilled innocent blood. And then, of course, the question, why would a malevolent spirit want to avenge these kinds of killers? Isn't this kind of what you do, malevolent spirit?
Well, and I think that's how it is in the comics. I think the malevolent spirit does want to kill more indiscriminately, and it's Robbie that chooses to use the power to punish those who deserve it. So it's kind of a twist on the demon's desires.
Okay. And then, of course, this is the point at which Gabe tells Robbie that he's not happy that Robbie is putting the blood of these people he's killed onto him, and he's certainly not wrong in telling his brother that.
Well, yeah, and I think it's the way he phrases it, because Gabe knows the legend of the Ghost Rider. He's seen the graffiti on the walls. He knows what the rumors have been around the barrio. So the fact that now he realizes his brother did all those killings, and you can't say in one breath, I didn't do it. It was the thing inside me. And then go right into saying they deserved it for what they did to you. So I totally don't blame Gabe for saying, no, don't put that on me. That's your guilty conscience.
Right, because you can't have it both ways. On the other hand, we don't necessarily know how long Robbie has been Ghost Rider, right?
Right. If he took out the entire Fifth Street Locos and you figure Gabe has had to have been in that wheelchair for long enough to get used to the idea. So it's got to, you would think a year at least, right?
Right. So what I'm getting at is that he's still processing what's happened to him. So his feeling guilty and, you know, almost pushing it on to his brother unfairly, of course, but it's understandable. And it's something that he's going to have to come to terms with.
Oh, no doubt. Yes.
All right. Now, what was that look Daisy gives at the end of all of this?
Yeah, I thought there was more to that. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. But after all that story was said and done between Gabe and Robbie, and he's saying that putting the blood of the people he's killed is not on him, I think Daisy was maybe extrapolating her own situation that she's feeling guilty as well, and perhaps putting the blood of the watchdogs and whoever else she's harmed onto Lincoln and being unfair to the memory of Lincoln. Am I thinking too hard there? Or?
No, I don't think so. And is that going to help Daisy return to S.H.I.E.L.D. or is that going to push her away at a quicker pace?
Well, if Gabe's words sink in with Robbie, then I think they'll sink in with Daisy as well. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, because it's funny, the two of them are developing a little bit of a connection as well.
Yeah, interestingly, I wonder where that's going to end up with this somewhat of a wrap-up or at least the end of the Ghost Crew storyline moving forward now just with the Darkhold.
Right, and how much of a role Gabe will play moving forward. I hope more than I thought initially because I was kind of lukewarm to his character when he first appeared, but he's really grown on me.
Me too, yeah.
All right, well, let's take a look at Eli Morrow's origin story. And look, I know we all love origin stories. I mean, that's the great thing about superheroes, you know?
Exactly. If you are a fan of any superhero shows, you want to know how they got their powers.
Right. So we see May's team at Momentum Labs, and the first thing she reports back to Coulson is that there are agents down. We assume they're dead. I guess it doesn't really matter in the big picture. But what is important is that Fitz, who's, you know, seeing what's going on through May's eyes, discovers that there are pieces missing in the lab, and he and Coulson piece together that Lucy is trying to replicate the original experiment, and they, of course, deduce that she's trying to reverse the process, which I guess on the one hand is kind of a leap.
Yeah, it's kind of a leap, number one. And number two, they stress the importance of stopping her from doing that. Why? Like, what would happen if she became corporeal again? Nothing. I mean, so they continue to say how it's very dangerous. And Fitz even stresses it to Director Mace that they have to pursue this because she could harm a lot of people.
Right, but that's later.
Yeah, he doesn't know that it's going to harm a lot of people right now. It's just about Lucy's motivations.
Right. So at this point, we're not sure what Lucy hopes Eli's going to be able to do for her. I mean, clearly something she can't show her face without scaring children, yeah. Coulson says.
That's May, actually, that says that.
Oh, that's May? Oh, you're right.
And she's not wrong, but yeah, at first I thought it was just to turn the pages of the Darkhold, but it seems like she can hold her own with physical objects, so you would think she could put the machine together herself, but perhaps she can't do it just from her own memory, and so she needs someone to be able to read the Darkhold so she can put it together the way Joe did.
Right, and somebody that can read it and actually understand it, because, look, if you or I were reading the Darkhold, we'd see...
What would we see?
I don't know. I don't know about you.
Audio
but
diagrams?
I didn't pay attention in physics.
Yeah, me either.
All right, so we're still in the present day. Eli and Lucy are preparing the experiment, but then he mentions that the original shouldn't have worked. So, you know, so we're back to that again. And she brings up sabotage. I guess that's just a smokescreen, right? I mean, she doesn't...
Oh, totally. Well, no, it is real. It's a smokescreen for us. Because when you watch it a second time, you realize she's talking about his sabotage because he put everyone in the little ghost cubes before everything was finished.
Right.
If he hadn't done that, then perhaps they could have followed through and completed the experiment. He did all that too early.
Right. So at this point, I mean, we know where the story ends up, but at this point, he's worried that it could kill thousands of people. She, of course, responds, not my problem, but is this just his attempt to buy some time so that he can do what he wants with it?
Yeah, it's very interesting because he doesn't have to pretend with Lucy. Lucy knows exactly what he did, even though we don't at this point in the episode. But yeah, it's an interesting strategy for him.
Okay. All right. So, you know, meanwhile, Fitz is going through the Momentum Labs inventory, figures out that it's all about the power for Lucy and not, you know, that she's power hungry, although she is power hungry. Yeah. The Momentum Lab can't produce enough power so that he deduces she's going to look for another possible location. He, of course, is able to narrow it down. And then that's where we get our first little teaser from Agent Carter.
All right. They kind of just give it a quick mention that May found some equipment in the Momentum Labs that was manufactured by Isodyne. And I immediately recognized that name. I was like, Isodyne? That was what was in Agent Carter. The origins of the Zero Matter or Dark Force. They kind of add that Dark Force element. I don't think they ever called it Dark Force in Agent Carter. It was just Zero Matter. But we finally get a bringing forward of that timeline because that had a sort of mystical source as well. And that was before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. went into non-scientific territory.
Right. And, you know, I love these acknowledgments. I read somewhere, and I don't remember whether it was on a Facebook group or in a comment at the bottom of a review, but somebody complaining that Marvel is just teasing us with yeah. this Agent Carter reference. And I'm like, no, come on. I love it.
Yeah, I think they can't do it enough. In fact, I would want them to do it more. I think one of our listener feedbacks mentions the possibility of maybe even having a flashback that has Haley Atwell in it. That would be lovely. But in researching Iodine, Fitz finally is able to unredact the documents, and we'll talk about the process that he had to go through to get that done. But he finds that they refer to Peggy Carter, the Zero Matter and Dark Force experiments in the 1940s. And of course, Mac has that great line, who names these? Are there focus groups for evil things?
Right. And I like it. Just, you know, that Fitz just lets that go.
And I think it's a little bit hypocritical of Mac to criticize nicknames since he's the nickname king. But anyway.
Oh, good point. Yeah, maybe he's getting a little jealous.
I could have come up with something better.
Exactly. Fitz figures out that Lucy is probably at Roxxon, which, of course, we know that name as well, because it absorbed Isodyne and owns the land deeds for Momentum. So we move to Roxxon's power station, and you know, here we see, you know, a lot of the backstory come out. She blames Eli for Joe's demise, and then he throws out that, yeah, well, my nephew's in a wheelchair because of those thugs that he hired.
Right, because we knew that he was targeted, or that they were targeted, and we weren't sure why that would be. And of course, it does come out that they weren't the targets. It was him instead.
Right. But of course, we think when we see that scene with Robbie and Gabe, we assume it has something to do with Robbie having beaten some guy out of $1,000 in a drag race.
I guess I kind of thought that, but I don't think that would have held up very long if it was put under any kind of scrutiny. But you're right. It was a little bit hidden behind other possible motivations for the hit.
All right. So again, we're back in the day at Momentum Energy Labs, and we see Eli trying to confront Joe, who reacts violently. Lucy tells Eli that he's just got to trust us. Here we go again with the trust. And anytime somebody says, just trust me, don't.
Exactly. And it's interesting that we see it only through Lucy's eyes. Joe's thinking process is completely hidden to us. We're just supposed to take it that he's a mad scientist. And I think that's another smokescreen so that we don't pay attention to what Eli is doing.
Right. And whether or not Joe developed into this mad scientist as a result of, as we said earlier, something in the Darkhold, or it's just that's his personality. And now that he's made this great scientific breakthrough, albeit with the help of Darkhold, he's just out of control. We don't know.
Or it could be that he sees that Eli has bad motivations, and maybe he had better motivations. We don't know.
Right. But then in keeping with the whole selling one's soul to the devil line of thinking when she asks Eli, well, where do you think the book came from? God didn't write that book. The devil did.
Right. It's interesting that she says that in reaction to his assertion that if you get rid of the machine and create matter yourself, just by thinking about it or whatever the power of the Darkhold gives the person, then you are basically a god. You're creating living matter, not just carbon, but eventually you could work up to creating life.
Right. And I think if we've learned anything from science fiction over the decades, playing God generally, again, does not end well.
No, definitely not.
All right. So speaking of playing God, the rest of the story kind of revolves around director Mace trying to bring down Robbie and Daisy. It seems as if he's more concerned with Robbie. Maybe it's the devil you don't know, so to speak, because he has more of an inkling what Daisy's all about. But, certainly he's trying to clean up, I would say, his city, but I guess it's his country.
Right. Well, I guess that's true. And I do think you're right about him paying more attention to Robbie, who has done a little vigilante killing in the prison. Whereas I think, as he even says, Mace understands Coulson trying to defend Daisy because she's a former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Robbie, on the other hand, is a completely different story.
Right. Totally unknown quantity. He's an enhanced individual rather than an inhuman at this point.
Right. I don't think Mace knows that until he sees him in action.
True.
But it's still someone he has to know about at the very least, because Coulson, of course, didn't tell him about Robbie or Daisy, right. But Robbie either.
Right. Now, what's the deal with this secret mission, right? So Mace tells Simmons, you've been chosen to do this for your government. She wants to pack a bag. No, you didn't understand me. You need to leave now. And then the next thing you know, the guy's going to put a black bag over her head.
Right. I think he makes it very clear this is not a mission from him. It's not even a mission from S.H.I.E.L.D. It comes from the highest levels of the U.S. government. And I immediately thought, oh, this is Nadir's mission.
Of course, has to be.
From the blackmail.
And of course, Simmons balks, especially at the secrecy, since I thought S.H.I.E.L.D. was playing up the transparency ideal. Here we go with the trust again.
Right. So now all we're left to wonder is, what the heck would Nadir want done on her behalf that Simmons could provide? Because you'd think it'd be all about getting rid of inhumans or reinforcing the watchdogs. That has nothing to do with Simmons' skill set.
Well, I'm wondering whether it has anything to do with her brother. Now, she doesn't necessarily know what Simmons knows and doesn't know.
Very nice. Yes. He's still stuck in that cocoon. Maybe she wants him to either shit or get off the pot, as it were.
I guess. And then, you know, as the two of them are about to go their separate ways, he comes out, a team that trusts is a team that, and she just goes,
no.
Don't.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So Mace's then Quinjet is preparing to board Zephyr, in his mind, to take Daisy and Robbie into custody. And Coulson is always cool. He looked a little nervous this time.
Yeah, and Max certainly was in a frenzy as he tried to get them hidden. It was interesting that Mace gave them warning so that they could do that, didn't you think?
I did, and I almost thought that he did that so that he could end up throwing it into Coulson's face.
Perhaps. I wouldn't put it past him.
Because he knows Coulson. He probably anticipated each step along the way. Because one of his soldiers goes over and, you know, reveals the containment facility. So he doesn't even say anything. It's just like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they knew that they would have to do the big reveal at some point.
Right. But I did like the little dance they were doing with the Star Wars illusions, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. It's interesting when they bring out Star Wars stuff because, of course, Disney can do that on ABC.
Yeah. Yes, they can.
But yeah, you can't lose with the audience of a show like this when you bring out the geek references.
Is there a Star Wars movie coming up? Oh, of course there is.
It's not all about Doctor Strange. Come on.
It's just a little more in the distance, but...
But it is a nice illusion. S.H.I.E.L.D. being like the Empire to Coulson, and his little team is like the rebels. I don't think that metaphor is too far off the mark for how Coulson feels about the directorship of Mace.
No, exactly. And the Han Solo not being a hero because he's always out for himself. And again, I know we say this a lot, but he's not wrong.
Yeah. Sorry, Phil. We love you.
Well, but that's part of the beauty of the way the show's developing. It's that, well, who's good, who's bad? I was having this conversation today at lunch about Continuum and the beauty of Continuum. Well, who's good and who's bad?
Yeah, it's always fun to have gray area.
Right, because she says, you know, I'm starting to think Liberate are actually the good guys.
Yeah, exactly. And you wonder if Mace is a good guy, despite all of what he's done, especially since he turns right around and does what they want in the end, even though he does hold them accountable.
Right. Best lines maybe come out of this scene when Mac is trying to shuttle everybody into their place to try to hide from Mace's searches. He tells Gabe, move it, Ironside. Screw you, Black Kojak.
Yeah. And immediately he says, I like this kid. Yeah. Because he can pull out a great nickname.
So, of course, probably a lot of the viewers, Ironside, Kojak.
Who are they?
All right. So Fitz is in his lab aboard Zephyr. And it's funny because when I first saw him, it just didn't occur to me immediately that he was actually on board Zephyr. But of course he is. And he's Skyping with May when Mace's soldiers enter looking for Daisy. And then of course, Fitz gets defensive and the fact that he doesn't trust the director. And then that mention about not hearing from Simmons. So, you know, we don't see much of Simmons in this episode, but that undercurrent is there nonetheless.
Yeah, I think they're just reminding us that things didn't necessarily end on a good note for them. And May asks him directly, is there something going on between the two of you that's causing a little trouble? And he admits that there is.
Yeah, because you can see in the business that they're in, trust and total openness, it's got to be very difficult.
It's hard to come by.
To achieve. Yeah.
Even for a involved couple.
Right. So Mace, of course, isn't born yesterday, brings the containment chamber up, and clearly is not happy with Coulson. And as we said, you can't blame him. And in fact, I think Coulson refers to him by his first name, and he says immediately, that's Director Mace.
Well, especially since he let that slide when he boarded. Jeff, Phil, you know, yeah. And not this time. I've caught you red-handed. And you have to admit that a lot of this could have been avoided if Coulson had been honest. And some of the things you understand why he's being dishonest and some of the things you don't. Like Daisy, I understand. Why Robbie? Why not tell him what's going on? Especially with the Darkhold.
Right. And I think it's been pretty clear that Mace understands Coulson's reticence to talk about Daisy, and he's kind of given him a pass with her.
Right. So you can't help but notice Mace's understanding, and it kind of limits the amount of sympathy you can have for Coulson.
Right. Now, we're back to Fitz again. He's trying to get access to these redacted documents from SSR, and Mac seems to be a little bit too trusting for my mind that Mace will just simply take them at their word, turn Zephyr around. And I'm wondering, well, what makes Mac think that Mace is going to do what they actually ask him to do at this point?
Right. Especially since they don't seem to have much foundation other than the fact that if she is going after more power, then maybe things could blow up and kill thousands of people. Okay. I mean, that's good. That's a noble cause. But Fitz is going against some pretty tough competition when it comes to the attention of the director on what he maybe perceives as a betrayal on Coulson's part and unredacting some files for him so that he can do some research. But it was very pointed. It was very, very noticeable that Mac dismissed Fitz's concerns out of hand. No, the director's a reasonable guy. And of course, he is a reasonable guy and does do what Fitz asks. So it's weird. It's strange.
Yeah. Now, obviously, they've been exposed, and Robbie starts wailing on the containment chamber, and it's really fun to watch those on the outside, Coulson, Mace, Fitz. That's going to hold, right? Oh, yeah, no problem. Nobody's ever gotten out of that. And, of course, we're thinking the same thing.
All right. Well, I think we mentioned when Robbie was first in the containment chamber, when they first met him, we were wondering if maybe he could get out. So I think there probably was a little bit of prediction on the audience's side that maybe he'll get out of here. And of course, that's exactly what he does.
Right. And, you know, when we talk about all of the levels of science involved, and then when the possibility of an actual deal with the devil is broached, Fitz and Coulson, of course, disagree on the possibility. Although, as Coulson says, yeah, the skull on fire kind of presents a pretty compelling argument for Hail Satan.
Exactly right. But I'm so glad that Fitz brings up those little comments like impossible. You know, that's of course ludicrous, you know. And when Ghost Rider does break out of the containment chamber, Fitz says that's not possible right before going to break.
Yeah. So then we come back and we see Mace square off with Ghost Rider, and I love it. Stay back. I've got this.
Yeah. It's the invulnerable patriot.
And at this point, I think we're all rather curious how this is going to play out, and I was a little surprised that it played out the way it did.
Right. I mean, Robbie is really pummeling on him, and you start to wonder, where's the vengeance here? Like, what merit does Ghost Rider's attack have? And I think with Gabe watching this happening, you know, he speaks the conscience of the audience in a sense, even though, you know, there's no real love lost for Mace. He certainly doesn't deserve to be beaten without any kind of recourse.
Right. I think Coulson instinctively knows that he's at fault in a lot of this conflict with Mace because of what he's done. I mean, Coulson's anything but stupid. The other interesting thing is watching Daisy try to get Gabe out of the way. And I wonder whether it's simply that she doesn't want Gabe to see his brother acting like Ghost Rider.
Right. And what it entails to have this curse or this power that he's admitted to having, and Gabe wants none of it. As soon as it's all over and Gabe has been able to plead with Robbie to get him to stop, and it does work. I think he's probably the only one that could have done that. But immediately afterwards, he says, get me out of here today.
Right. And we've been talking about Gabe's involvement moving forward. Clearly, he wants none of this. So, and again, this is not the first time we've seen a character say, I want nothing to do with you guys, and forced or cajoled or whatever, brought back. But it'll be interesting to see how they handle this.
Right. I think we may have seen the last of Gabe for a while.
All right. Now, Coulson admits, as we said, Mace isn't wrong about Robbie, although painting him as a terrorist is a little Fox News, he says. But he's a murderer. And I love when Mace then says, okay, fine, and we go back to the fact that Mace is a reasonable man. He's going to have to pay for what he did. Coulson says, I agree, but today's not that day.
Right. He's the only one that can take out Lucy Bauer with his special fire powers that can get rid of spirits, so they have no choice.
What's going to happen in episode 7 now that it's all over? Ghost Rider goes to jail? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
All right, well, the two S.H.I.E.L.D. teams arrive at Roxxon. Again, I love Daisy can't hack in because the system predates the internet.
Yeah, I love that.
Of course, that's what saves Galactica.
Exactly right. Very good.
Coulson, how'd you get anything done in the old-timey days?
Yeah. And he actually says, yeah, I've often wondered that myself. But
right. Right. Now, the other thing that occurred to me, and I love the way it transpired, was that I was surprised that she wasn't fighting to be allowed to go with them. And then, of course, you know, 30 seconds later, she mentions, you know, I wish I was out there with you guys instead of here on injured reserve. So when you think about it, though, what she was asked and tasked to do was certainly more important in the big picture. Now, the fact that, you know, they were offline, nobody knew that at the time.
Right. And I think Fitz still harbors a little bit of resentment for Daisy's mission. When he points out, you know, you've been using your fists more than your hacking skills, so you're a little out of practice. He's had a couple of comments like that, which I found interesting.
Right.
Which means she hasn't been totally accepted back into the fold by some people.
Right. All right, so we get the final face-off, Robbie versus Lucy, and she tells him she recognizes him, and I'm thinking, like, okay. But, of course, she thinks he's Gabriel, like the angel. No, I'm the other one.
Yeah, well, she knows the history of Eli's family, Of course, they were coworkers. Perhaps they were at some kind of company picnic or something. I don't know. But yeah, she actually sees Eli in his nephew a little bit there.
Yeah. So what does May actually do with the book? Where does she take it?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the fact that they even came across it surprised me a little bit, because where was Eli at that particular point? Lucy, of course, was off confronting everyone, but the fact that it was left alone was awfully fortuitous. But thank goodness, and Coulson had the presence of mind to give it to the one person he trusts. And there's that issue of trust again.
Yeah, and I guess I thought that Eli got what he needed out of Darkhold, and that's why it was left out in the open.
Well, but didn't he seem a little worried that it had been taken?
I guess. Yeah, you're probably right.
But I guess he did get what he wanted in the end, but that's as far as he'll be able to take it, unless he can somehow fight his way back with his new powers.
All right. So, speaking of power, Fitz and Mac can't get the system to power down, and then I love that it's Mac that comes up with the idea to use the perpetual EMPs, and Fitz just goes, yeah, good idea.
Yeah, and of course, because the comms are down, I thought, why is it important that the comms are down? I was watching for different signs of what this meant, the fact that they couldn't communicate with each other. And in the end, I think it's the fact that because Fitz was left alone, because Coulson was left alone by May, they're the only ones that end up getting caught up in the shockwave. And this is something that caught me completely by surprise on the rewatch. So definitely an interesting development to have Mac be separated from the group because he went back to get that EMP device.
Right. And I got to be honest, I did a rewatch, and it wasn't until you pointed it out to me. Michael comes into my classroom with his laptop and
yeah.
Here.
I said, it's not just Coulson. It's right. Fitz too. Fitz is gone.
So Coulson comes face to face with Eli, and he assumes Eli's going to help him dismantle it. But, you know, of course, instead, Eli locks himself in the chamber, mumbling something about why would I when it's taken me this long to achieve.
And then all the pieces start to fall into place, and we realize that Eli was the bad one. And they go directly to, of course, Lucy telling Robbie the truth about his uncle as well. So it's very interesting to see how the tables turn, and you realize that it wasn't just Joe that was being corrupted. And then, of course, there's the explanation now for why he smiled last week upon seeing the Darkhold. He was happy about it.
Yeah. And then in a flashback, we see that it was Eli who put each of them, as we said, in the containers. Now, did he put them into the chamber and reduce them to a block of matter? I mean, is that?
No. The chamber is what creates the block of matter.
Oh, the chamber. Okay.
He did it the other way around. He got them into the chamber by converting them into energy. That's why were they those little clouds of dust before they became ghosts. They were basically the same as whatever energy sources they were using to create matter. But yeah, it's interesting to see that process being used in reverse, which is why Lucy thought that he could do it the correct way and put her back into her own body.
Okay. Now, I liked what they did in that end scene when everything's going to hell. Coulson's trying to disconnect hoses because Fitz, of course, can't power it down. And for a split second, I think we figure that, okay, that's going to work. But then on the other hand, you think, well, no, it's not, because that's the way the episode's going to end, or, you know, something along those lines. And, you know, somewhere in the middle is the truth. But then Eli walks out and he can create matter himself. And he has that piece of carbon that he creates in his hand.
Yeah. So pretty cool. And I think the reason that Coulson couldn't stop it by pulling out a bunch of hoses is the same reason why Fitz and Mac could not turn anything off in the control room. It's because they were using perhaps a little bit of zero matter left over from the 40s, something that was powering up this process besides conventional power. Don't you think?
I do. And in this week's Sandbox epilogue, so what happened to Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie?
Yeah, since we don't get an epilogue on the show, our epilogue is, what the heck? The shockwave went through, and then they show an empty control room where Fitz was, an empty chamber where Eli was. He walks out and there's no Coulson there. And Robbie also got caught up in the shockwave, and they show the hallway where he was empty. And it goes by so quickly that you could miss it. I think you and I, Dave, the first time we watched it, we only thought that Coulson disappeared.
Correct.
And then we realized, no, Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie are gone. Where did they go? Oh my gosh. Couldn't believe it.
Parallel universe.
I hope not.
I'm kidding. No, I would not like that.
But yeah, what an ending. If you have to end some way and not have an epilogue, that's the way to do it. So we had some great moments, and I think Faith kind of gave us some extra choices this week, which was nice since there were so many good choices, not just from Coulson, in fact. So as we go into the Coulsass report, you'll hear some lines from several different characters that you'll be able to vote on this week. So take it away, Faith.
Hello, everyone. It's time again for the weekly Coulsass report. This week was chock full of sass with a dash of defiance, and for maybe the first time, possibly the second, a non-regular character has sass on my list. But before I share those, here's the winner from last week's episode. It was neck and neck all week, but the winner pulled out in front by one vote. And that winner? Taco Tuesday.
May, want to go to prison? Could be Taco Tuesday.
Now, here are this week's contenders. Number one, eyeballs.
So I feel so much better knowing that if I die in a fiery explosion, my eyeballs will survive.
Number two, I have zero geese.
You deny they're on board? Geese? I have zero geese. We are goose free.
Number three, tricky bastards.
Director's orders.
Stairwell's clear.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, in that case, you should check under the microscope and in the fridge, because those inhumans can be tricky bastards.
Number four, hail Satan.
Claims he made a deal with the devil.
Which is nonsense.
You know, the rationalist in me wants to agree, but Skull on Fire presents a pretty compelling argument for Hail Satan.
And number five, pretend outrage.
Honestly, even with Coulson's signatures, do you know how hard it was for me to find someone with a Roy G. Bev clearance just so I could unredact these files?
Do I have to pretend to be outraged, or can we get to it?
Did I miss your favorite moment? Hopefully not. If you catch any awesome sassy moments when we come back from hiatus, hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at FBMC with the hashtag Coulsass. A shout out to Christopher and Taltos for sending tweets my way this week. To vote for this week's contenders, please visit facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM. Remember to only vote for one. While you do that, I'm going to brush up on my British slang. Have a great week, everybody.
All right, so you got a long time to vote on this one. You won't hear the results of it until the end of November, but go ahead and go on the Facebook group to vote for your favorite sassy line. I know which one I'm going to pick. So
me too.
All right, let's get into feedback. We have a couple this week. We heard from Skimmins, who says, was it just me or did anyone else laugh at the back in the day timestamps instead of them giving actual years? And I don't know if it'll be in Faith's segment, but I'm already voting for Phil's geese comeback in the Coulsass poll. And of course, that line was definitely in there. Nice Star Wars talk between Phil and Mace, agreed. And great Agent Carter callback with Isodyne. Don't put their blood on me, a great scene between Gabe and Robbie. I guess it's safe to assume the Good Samaritan was Johnny Blaze, unless another version of Ghost Rider also rides a bike. I love that Mace wasn't fooled by the missing pod. I'll continue to say I'm so happy with how he challenges the group. Seeing Daisy flexing her computer skills is always great. Yeah, Skimmins always likes to see Daisy return to her roots. Fitz's comment about too much punching and not enough hacking was also great. Eli playing with the zero matter at the end so made me think of Whitney Frost. And I think actually, Skimmins, that was a lump of coal or a piece of carbon, like Dave said, not zero matter. Although it did kind of look like that, didn't it? I have to say, I really missed the epilogue scene for this episode. The Doctor Strange sneak peek was neat, but I'd rather have seen an epilogue. I wonder if that was the scene John Hannah was supposed to be in, given his name was in the credits, but he wasn't in the actual episode. Oh, wouldn't that be interesting if they decided to axe whatever they had planned in favor of the Doctor Strange sneak peek?
Yeah.
It could be. But I also wonder, says Skimmins, if the epilogue would have teased Gemma's whereabouts, because I'm wondering if she's really on a legit assignment, or if Mace is setting her up with this assignment because he no longer trusts her due to last week's blackmail. A good episode. Yeah, and that would be that would have made a good epilogue as well, showing Gemma getting the hood taken off and having something shocking happen there.
Well, yeah, but I think she's right about it has something to do with last week's blackmail, just not Simmons blackmail, but as we said, Senator Nadir.
Oh, right, right. I actually took it that way, but yeah, you're right. She Simmons was referring to her blackmail against Mace.
At least that's what I think she meant.
I think you're right. But yeah, I definitely think that we're talking about an assignment that Nadir created for Simmons.
Yeah. All right. So Taltos says that another episode with Agent Carter references, is it too much to hope that they could be foreshadowing a flashback scene coming up? And you kind of alluded to that.
That would be nice, but I don't think so.
Yeah. Robbie seemed to be doing a very serious beatdown on Mace's face, and yet it showed no bleeding or even bruising. But isn't that his power? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, well, Taltos goes on to say possibilities about an LMD, but yeah, I think that's the Patriot. It's very Captain America. If you put a beat down on Captain America, I think you'd see the exact same result. Nothing.
Of course, as you said, I should have kept reading. Either one of Mace's inhuman powers is indestructibility, or this is more evidence for the theory that he's an LMD. I really hope that Senator Nadir blackmailed Mace into having his inhuman expert take a look at her cocooned brother, and that it's not a more nefarious reason that Simmons was taken away.
Oh, that's where you must have seen it, in Taltos' feedback.
No, I never read the feedbacks.
Oh, okay.
I never read them until we're on the air.
But that's true. The theory that we hatched earlier is the same that Taltos came up with, that maybe she wants Simmons to take a look at the cocooned brother.
Yeah. And then finally, Simmons and Fitz have already had more than enough drama in their relationship. Yeah, they haven't been together all that long. Come on.
I know. Give them some moments. I mean, we had a couple of tender things, and I think some people want it to be understated. And I guess I kind of count myself among that number, even though I am a Fitzsimmons shipper.
Well, I do too, and because I think it's more in line with who they are and who we've seen them be through, you know, the last 3.5 years.
I agree. But I'm glad it still got that brief mention when he was Skyping with May. So a nice touch. But this episode all around was very great. We didn't mean to sound critical about the episode by mentioning the pacing and the editing, because the story was top-notch. And of course, like we said, it did feel very much like a mid-season finale or the end of act one of perhaps 3 or 4 acts throughout the season. So it'll be interesting to see how the dynamic changes, because we kind of got used to 2 mini-seasons within the season, and it's likely not going to be that way this year.
Well, you know what? On the one hand, how cool would that be? I mean, that would really be, at least to my knowledge, a first that you produce a season spread out over 3 or 4 acts.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
I mean, they're used to separating it out anyway. Why not just segment it further and have like little chapters? I think that would be fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did and our discussion as well. But that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @Shield_GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM, which is also where you can vote on the Colsass report.
And Mike and I'll be back on November 29th with our discussion of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Episode 7 of Season 4, which we don't actually know what the title is yet. Remember, after the episode airs, head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. You can write a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or call 304-837-2278.
And while you're waiting patiently during the long hiatus, why not take the time to give us an iTunes review and rating at goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes to let us know how you've been enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Remember, 28 days is not that long, people.